What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to Off the Chain, simply the best podcast in crypto. Let's kick this thing off.
Frederick Chesnais is the CEO and chairman of the board at Atari. In this conversation, we discuss the history of Atari's brand, how cryptocurrencies can incentivize new types of work, why gaming is finding product market fit in crypto, and what Atari plans to do to capitalize on the crypto opportunity. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do as well.
Before we kick off this podcast, first a word from our sponsor, BlockFi. As many of you know, crypto investors store their digital assets on exchanges or in cold storage for long-term safekeeping. However, this strategy doesn't help them grow their investment holdings or build overall wealth. With the new BlockFi interest account, users can now securely store their Bitcoin or Ether at BlockFi and receive 6% annual interest paid monthly in cryptocurrency. 6% is an absurdly high rate. It's the best rate in the industry. I highly suggest you go check out BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, that's BlockFi.com/pomp to sign up and start earning crypto today.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys, bang, bang. I am here with Fred. Super excited to go over everything that you've been up to. So thanks for so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
For sure. All right, give us your background. You are not from America.
No, I'm from France. Was born there a long time ago.
French people always say it so much better than Americans. Yeah. France,
yeah.
In America,
France.
We're just dumb and we say French.
France.
Or France.
No, but so I was born there. I stayed there until the 2004. But I was working between France and the U.S. And I stopped, I had to come here because I was just going to bed at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., so I was just like a disc jockey in France. And my background is very interesting because I started in finance, starting also as a CPA, then got bored of numbers and decided I wanted to become a lawyer to make deals, big deals.
Okay.
Nobody's perfect. So I became a lawyer in France. And then I said, you know what? What I really want to do is really bigger deals. So I went into investment banking. Spent 5 years at Lazard, and this is where I started to invest and advise in the space. So it was a long time ago. It was in 1995. And I was in Paris, and I started to really look into the space. But at the time, you know, PlayStation wasn't really there. Xbox, definitely not. Mm-hmm. So what started is that I was, one of my clients was Infogrames Entertainment. And it was, at the time, you know, bigger than Ubisoft. So we were advising the company, and I was going quite along with the founders. So 5 years later, in 2000, I left the bank, and I joined the company. So we teamed up, and at the time, we were mainly doing internet, not really video games. But in 2001, we all, you know, woke up after the big crisis, and we all came back into the company, and we said, okay, now let's do it. We have something that's, you know, we were losing a lot of money, but we had just acquired Hasbro Interactive from Hasbro. Mm-hmm. And inside Hasbro Interactive was the Atari brand. And we knew it. At the time, everyone was very excited about games.com, which is a URL that I ended up selling a few years later because we had to make ends meet and we had to redeem a lot of debt. At the time, we had 550 million euros of debt. Because we had bought everything, GT Interactive, Hasbro Interactive. So we knew that we had the Atari brand and all the games inside. So we renamed gradually our companies because we had subsidiaries in every country. So we renamed our companies Atari, and ultimately the holding company became Atari SA. So the French company became Atari SA. So that was, in from 2000 to 2009.
Okay.
And I left in 2007 because at the time we had so much debt, a hedge fund became the largest shareholder. Mm-hmm. They bought the debt and they made their way, and we helped them because we knew we had to repay the debt. We all left in 2007, and in late 2012, early 2013, the hedge fund called me back. They want the, it's public domain. You'll find the name of the hedge fund, but it's public domain. They call me back and they said, look, we want out. Please come back. We would like you to buy back the company from us.
So, okay, let me recap for a second. You basically went from being a lawyer to an investment banker to an operator, and almost exclusively operated within the gaming industry. And you started out acquiring these different divisions or companies from larger players, eventually get a hold of the Atari brand. You create this new Atari kind of strategy, go for it, you execute, sell to a hedge fund.
Yeah.
And then this is when the story gets really good.
So, yeah.
Right? So you guys leave. The hedge fund we takes over.
It was not a one-man show. We were three.
Okay.
Three or four, but it was a good team. And then when the hedge fund arrived, I said, look, yeah, here's the water is here, electricity is there, gas. If you need us, you know where to find us. So we all left in 2007.
Okay. So basically the team leaves 2007. Yeah. Hedge fund's in charge. What happens?
So they went through six or seven CEOs, but they ended up losing like 400 million euros. And for me, it was just like, whoa. So when I left, I negotiated not only to take some cash, but I had the severance to be paid. So I also I bought the MicroProse brand at the time, okay. MicroProse, which I ended up selling a few years later. But everyone went on its own. So some came back to France. I stayed here. So I kept investing in, I created a company called Interactive Game Group, I2G, mm-hmm. like stupid name, but my plan was to create a big portfolio of intellectual rights for games. So I started, I'm quasi responsible for fitness games because I created with Jillian Michaels, we created, and Giancarlo Chirsic, we created Jillian Michaels Fitness Ultimatum for the Wii, the balance board.
Yep.
We sold a few units, I would say, millions of units.
It's pretty popular, right?
Yeah, but Jillian was great. And it was a perfect timing. But, so I always kept an eye on Atari, and it's true that they were going down and down because it's, you know, the game business is super difficult.
Mm-hmm. So when you guys left, you were still creating games, you were still creating different things, right? Still kind of involved, but just not at Atari.
Exactly.
Right?
No, I kept a licensing gig mm-hmm. or advisory gig with Atari. But no, I made fitness games, I invested in zombie games, mm-hmm. I'm the one behind Nether, which is a game online that just got rebooted 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Nether, if you want to check it out on Steam. We just kept doing that, but you know, my eye was always on Atari. Mm-hmm. And when the opportunity came back, when they called me, I said, yeah, of course. So it took me 1 day and a half to go through the data room, because basically it was just like, I know the contract, I did sign it, look at the signature page. So it was very funny. But at the time, early 2013, they were making 1 million euros of revenue.
Okay.
And more than 30 million euros of debt.
So hold on a second. When you guys sell this in 2007 and you guys leave, you come back basically, and when you see the company, it's 1 million euros in revenue, 30 million euros in debt.
In debt. So, yeah.
Not exactly a appetizing situation.
It's a startup. It's a big... Plus, they had a great idea, which was to file for bankruptcy in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, why did you file for bankruptcy? And they say, oh, we thought it was a nice way to get some money with deep financing. And I'm like, dude, really?
Yep.
So what happened, it took me basically, so what I did, I bought the French company, which was an old company, so I bought it back. I became the largest shareholder, but the business, it was and is still in the US. So mm-hmm. here I had to go, the French company was solvent, the parent company was solvent, so I bought it. But then I have to make my way out of the U.S. bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you know, it is what it is. It cost us, $10 million. But I ended up paying $1.7 million to the creditors and more than $8 million to the advisors, like the lawyers and the bankers. So, I'm a banker, so I appreciate that, and I'm a lawyer as well. But
the creditors got just under $2 million, and basically the lawyers and the bankers got $8
million. Yeah. But it's what was very important to me is that I was able to basically work a plan with the creditors, with the bankers, the advisors, and we were able to keep the brand, because the brand could have been sold through auctions.
Yep.
So we had to sell a few games. So we sold, I think, 6 or 7 games for like $5 million. And with that, we were able just to, you know, put some gas in the tank and keep the ball rolling. But what was interesting is that I was able to basically keep the brand, keep the games, keep Test Drive, keep the Roller Coaster Tycoon license. The only Atari game really that we sold at the time was Battlezone, which, you know, it doesn't have the Atari name word in the name, so that was okay. But in any case, we had to leave bankruptcy. So it took us from early 2013, January, February 2013, to basically, it took us 18 months to leave bankruptcy. And after that, I still had 30 million euros of debt to redeem, because the debt, the 30 million euros was on top of the bankruptcy. It was the parent company level. So then I had to tackle that, and I ended up repaying all the debt in 2016, roughly. And in the meantime, we made everything we could just to rebump and to revitalize the business.
Yep.
So to do that, you know, it's we had to make a very simple choices. What we did was we selected two IPs, and one was and is Roller Coaster Tycoon, because I knew the franchise quite well. So we restored with that, and we also restored with Atari Vault, which is basically the old Atari games, all packaged in one single bundle. But we've not tried to, for the moment, but Navis is coming, we've not tried to relaunch a new Warlord, a new Tempest, a new Missile Command, a new whatever, Adventure. That's coming now. So with these two franchises plus a very solid licensing program, we were able just to reboot the business, but I did it in a very, very different way, different manner. You know, in, let's say, if you look at the year 2005, we had 2,500 employees, of which 1,000 developers. So
in 2005, you had 1,000 developers, yeah, and 2,500 employees.
Yes.
Wow.
Roughly. We went as high as 3,000 something. Mm-hmm. We had 10 studios in Dallas, Los Angeles,
huge company,
Melbourne, everything. Yeah, we were doing 750 million euros of revenue. So, but to reboot the company, I mean, I could have tried to raise the money and do the same, but my goal is again that just to build on the portfolio, to have a very, very valuable of portfolio of games, and it's easier for us to do that and team up with third-party studios.
Yep.
So you have, it might cost you more than if you had them internally, but at least, you know, if you take a studio that does
lower
racing
risk.
Games, yes, it's lower the risk, you don't pay the downtime, but the most important thing is that I can tell you, you know, I've lost a lot of money with games, I've made a lot of money, but if you have a studio that does racing games, I can tell you, they can only do, and they will only do racing games. It's just part of their DNA. You just have to acknowledge that. So there's, you know, so much racing games you can do. So right now, I think what we're doing is that we're back. Very, very different organization, very, very different structure. We are less than 20 employees. We do more than $20 million of royalties. So now we have partners who push the boxes at retail. We have a new console coming. Again, we partner with people. We have casino games, so it's very, very different organization, and we're very happy with that.
So I really want to touch on how big this market is, right? I think a lot of people hear Atari's name, they think kind of the legacy games that we all know and many of us grew up loved, but describe how big gaming is, both domestically in the U.S., but also internationally.
So I think, well, you have numbers all over the place, but I think the most important thing to understand is that you have different markets, right? First, you have consoles. So that's one thing. This is the Microsoft, the Sony, the Nintendo of the world.
This
that's
is Xbox, console. PlayStation, exactly. Dreamcast, whatever things.
Nintendo Switch. So that's console. Then you have PC. This is so console is big in the US, in Europe. There's no console in China, not for the moment. But this is big in the US and in Europe. Mm-hmm. Then you have PC. PC is all over the place.
And this is Minecraft.
The Minecraft Steam as a distribution. You have PUBG. You have
whatever game.
Whatever games, you know. Fortnite, of course. And then you have mobile. On mobile, you have Apple and you have Android. Mm-hmm. So that's basically the video game business.
Okay.
So I'm not going to, I mean, you, it's billions of dollars depending on if you put China, not China. If you, I mean, we're talking.
It's big.
It's big. We're talking 100 billion easily. But on top of it, what people have to understand is that you have also gambling. So gambling is not, I'm not talking casino, I'm talking gambling, real money games on the phone, right? So you, you have, of course, you can think, okay, slot machines, you can think number games, lottery games, but more and more you have esports. Esports, yep. Is that, what is it? Is it a game? Is it gambling? Is it casino? It's not regulated, but you can make money. So you have all these new business, and I can tell you, you know, what we're looking at here is also very big. We do, as Atari, we do casino games on phones in Europe and in Africa.
So you guys, let me back up for 1 second. There is the three buckets you described, but then there's also this esports, casino games, all this stuff that in the United States is actually not legal or is heavily regulated, right?
No, esports now, it's open.
Well, esports is different than the casino games, right? The casino games in many states are still regulated, etc.
So, as long as you're
outside the U.S. is different.
Yeah, so, okay, so I think video games, we all know what it is. Mm-hmm. Real money games, it's very, you have three types of games. You have games where you have only luck, which is casino.
Yep.
You have games where it's only skill, which is esports. And then in between, you have a combo of, we call that hybrid games. It's a combo of luck and skill. If you have luck, basically you have to go and get the license. It's cleaner, easier in the U.S. Outside of the U.S., it really depends on the country.
Okay.
Country where it's monopoly.
So luck is the one that's heavily regulated.
Luck is regulated, and frankly, for everyone listening, if you have a game that involves luck, but basically, think about it. If a monkey can play the game and win, then you have luck. So I think it's that's a way to. That's always the test I put myself for. Just a kid like 2 years old, 1 year old, just pressing the button, you win money.
Luck.
It's better get a license.
You're so, offending these smart kids that are out there winning the spelling bee at like age three now.
Yeah, but they don't make a lot of money. So it's unfortunate for them. I think it should be a sport. But so you have gambling. But the point is this: for anyone listening, I mean, the point is, if you think about this industry, I can just tell you it's going to keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. Why? Mm-hmm. Like, why is he saying this? Stupid. No. Between 40 and 60 years old, people don't play enough. So you have, it's like as if we were doing TV, producing TV shows, but no one between 40 and 60 would watch TV. Why am I putting a line at 60-ish? Because we've realized that grandparents would play more than parents to bond with their grandchildren. That's very interesting. And also because you had that Nintendo game, Brain Age, that was basically, deemed to fight Alzheimer. I don't think it's true, but it was just like
trying.
So that's the first thing. You have a big age group that are not playing. Second, women are not playing as much as male. So here you have a second bucket of growth. Third, if you think about India, South America, Africa, all these, you know, even China, all these big territories, there's no one, I mean, the level of players is not the same as in the US, so you still have a pocket here. And then the fourth reason is that more and more you have new platforms, right? Now you can play on the phone, tomorrow you'll be able to play wherever, on Facebook. So, so for all these reasons, this industry still has like 20 to 30 years of growth easily, easily. After that, you're always as good as your last game, but that's the plan.
And most of these games, they're fun. They're entertainment, right? So like people are never going to want to not have fun or not be entertained.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, of course, you spend more time. You know, you allocate time. So that's the only issue for us. It's the competition is really, you know, everyone who is competing for your time for entertainment, is it Facebook, Google, whoever, for us it's a competitor. It's not only the game publishers. Facebook is a competitor because the minute you spend on Facebook, you don't spend it playing video games.
Got it. And so we hear a ton about crypto and blockchain entering into the gaming space, right? Everything from these non-fungible tokens to instantaneous settlement for casino games, just all kinds of stuff. From your seat, you know, you've been at this a really long time. Give us an understanding of like how crypto actually fits in. Where do you think it makes sense, and where do you think maybe it doesn't make sense?
Well, I think for me first, I mean, I don't want to say that the video game company industry created the crypto, but we're very used to having virtual
digital
currency
assets.
Because,
yep,
that's part of it, you know, this is why we're still alive. Because we know in every game, any game, we know to create a currency. So I think we're very familiar with that. Now, the other way around, from crypto into gaming, I think there are basically three ways. One is more and more you'll be able, with the non-fungible tokens, you'll be able to play video games, and you will have more and more games based on crypto and digital assets. I mean, CryptoKitty is a very good example. If you look at a company that we have partnered with, Animoca, they have a license from Formula One to do a crypto game or a game based on crypto, non-fungible tokens for Formula One. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the game is about. They announced it, but so yes, there will be crypto and blockchain in the game space. The second thing is more and more you'll see when we do I'm talking gambling now, gaming being for video games, gambling for casino games. For us, a crypto is just another line in the database of currencies. Mm-hmm. As long as your platform supports 10, 20, 50 different currencies, adding a crypto is not a problem, as long as you have somebody who can do the transaction on the other side. But so more and more you will have is, I think, casino games using crypto, definitely. Mm-hmm. And the third, I would say the third element or the third point of convergence is that, and this is what we're trying to do, we're trying to create a platform where new users will be able to log on and work inside the industry.
All right, so there's two separate bodies of work here. One is what I'll call crypto fitting into the legacy system, right, of gaming, which is everything from blockchain-based games to just using Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies as the medium of exchange within a game, right? So that's kind of the old model stays true, and now you're just adding blockchain or cryptocurrency into it to replace a single piece.
Correct.
The second bucket of work that you're talking about is building basically a work marketplace,
yes,
right? To use cryptocurrency as an incentive tool to get people to work from anywhere in the world on different tasks.
Exactly.
Okay, explain this more.
So what we've done, there's a company called Infinity Networks,
okay,
Limited, that we've created with a few developers, and I'm very proud to remind everyone here that Anthony DiIorio is also one of the founders, and he's also one of the partners. Anthony is one of the co-founders of Ethereum. So what we're trying to do here through this company in INL is create an Atari platform where anyone will be able to log on and work in the industry. Let me just first give you the few reasons why we're doing it. Today, you have approximately between 2 and 3 billion people that are connected. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, you know, with all the satellite systems that are being launched, you're going to have, is it 5-6 billion people, but you're going to have many more people, a lot of people connected. And these people will want to earn a living. So we see that as an opportunity. We see that as an opportunity. Of course, we're not going to program a game from A to Z. Definitely not the case. But we believe that this new tranche of individuals will be able to provide services in the video game industry, such as testing, translating, doing some little animations. And as time goes by, I think they will earn, you know, they'll go on YouTube, they'll just train themselves, and they will be able to do more and more sophisticated tasks. And we see that as an opportunity. So what we're trying to do is creating a platform where they can log on and be offered through the blockchain smart contracts to perform initially simple tasks, but then more and more complex tasks that will be helpful in the, I don't want to say game, I just want to say in the multimedia space. Again, it could be checking a translation, checking a dubbing of a voice in the local language, could be testing the game, could be many of these tasks, which will increase in complexity. But why do you need the blockchain here? You don't really need, you need the crypto, but first you need the blockchain to have a smart contract, mm-hmm. because you don't know where these guys are. I'm not saying that you don't care, because you do care about the quality of the work, but you don't know who they are. I mean, they have no address. They have a cell phone, but I can tell you, that's for sure. But they have no address, they have no ID, they'll never have any credit card, any debit card, forget the Amex.
What you're basically talking about is there's almost like, to the Western world, there's a shadow workforce, right? There's a bunch of humans.
It's not shadow necessarily.
Well, just what I mean by shadow is the means by which we would recognize work, right? Workers in the Western world is they would ask you for identification. They would ask you for your home address. They would ask you for your bank account details, your social security or other identifying numbers. In many countries around the world, there's tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people who don't have that information.
But they have no address.
Right? Yeah, they have no way to provide those details. And so what I think I hear you saying is that blockchain and cryptocurrency can basically provide a lot of the same infrastructure to these people without them having to kind of catch up. They almost leap ahead, and now they can receive payments. They can actually participate in a global economy without having to get an address, for example.
But they would, for instance, if you have a very simple task to perform, a task that can be embedded into a smart contract, it's impossible to find first. Assume you have found the guy. He's not going to sign you a 10-page document just mm-hmm. to earn $150. Mm-hmm. So it's impossible. Forget about it. And second, he doesn't have a bank account.
Yep.
So
you can't even pay him.
You can't pay him. It's just like, look, I've been trying to send money to the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kinshasa, the former Belgian colony. It's just incredibly. It's impossible to send $100 because we had a tester there, and I wanted just to use that as a test case and say, okay, let us send him $100 for, he had worked like 20 minutes. I wanted just to give him $100 for his services. It took me 5 days. So I think this is why the blockchain is very, very important for these people, because you don't need to, as long as you know that the work has been done, and of course you have an ID, you know, but you know that guy, he has that name. Okay, great. You may want to meet him one day if you go there. But the most important thing you want is to have the workforce pay him and make sure that, you know, the work is done. And on his end, what he wants is make sure he's going to get paid. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible for him to sign a 10-page document. It doesn't mean anything. So that's why I think blockchain is important and then should be very helpful. After that, you know, once they get the crypto, they'll find a way to get liquidity. It's not going to be difficult even today. Look at Africa. I can tell you, I work a lot in Kenya, for instance. Two-thirds, I mean, they basically leapfrogged the bank development stage. There's no, the banks are gone. The money is with the telco. And two-thirds of the transactions, financial transactions in Kenya are done with mobile money.
I think about this all the time.
It's crypto. It's like on the phone. You send a text message. You have to go there to really understand what it is. And it's very cheap. It's 1%, one person, 1.5%. And everyone is like, great, no problem, but at least it's working.
In almost the entire continent of Africa, not every country, but many countries were drastically behind on a financial infrastructure basis the Western world. And with the advent and proliferation of mobile banking, they leapfrog, right? Yes. Like they are way ahead now. And they actually can use financial infrastructure that we struggle with in mm-hmm. the Western world because it's so mobile, because it is so connected. It is top down from the telcos. It feels like blockchain is going to help many of these areas who see the value and embrace it immediately continue to leap ahead, whereas the Western world, we're okay with the infrastructure we have, right? It works for us on most use cases, and so we're less likely to be the first adopters.
But I think it works for us for a very simple, for a series of very simple reasons. I have an ID, I have a bank account, I have a Visa, MasterCard, and or an Amex, I'm good. So why would I just go through blockchain crypto? Because I have everything and it's working. It has a cost, yeah, but also I have security, I have an insurance, right? If I get fraud on my business card, yeah, I'm gonna get protection. So why would I make the move? But I think at the end of the day, we will all make the move because you will have a mass of people that will just make the move before us. And if we want to be in a position to catch up with these guys, we'll just have to make the move. And I think, I don't know what's going to happen to the you know, the Western banks, but it's true that right now the wall, you see a lot of transactions going to telcos in Africa. It's in, it's just insane. Kenya, Tanzania, Nigeria, all these countries, this is just the way it works. So we'll see if that, you know, for the moment it's working for us, but because we have the KYC and AML, try to do a KYC just in Ethiopia, be my guest. There's no drug.
Good luck.
Yeah, be my guest. So I think this is where, back to Atari, this is what we see as an opportunity. And you, I can just also give you a very another very, very simple example. You know, take Fortnite, take Pokemon Go, take any game. You know, today you can play, you can build your avatar up to a certain level and then you can sell it. So for these new people coming, you know, joining online, they'll see that also as a way to make money. Because for us, okay, $150 in New York City, you're not going to make a living out of that. But I can tell you, if you live in a village in Kenya or in Uganda, if you can make $150 a week building an avatar, just because the issue will be the access to the hardware. But I think the hardware will come for free or will come through the existence of basically farms where you go, you rent 1 hour, 2 hours of hardware. But even the phones are so powerful today that you'll be able to build your avatar up to a certain level and make $100, $125, $150 a week. And this is a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing here is that access to the internet, the connectivity to the rest of the world, you can learn, right? So you can pick up the skills that it takes to edit, to create, to
everything
do all this stuff.
Everything is on YouTube.
Absolutely. And then you could turn around and you can then use that to participate in the digital economy. Yes. The hard part is how do you get paid?
Yeah.
Right, and if there's a way to get paid with some sort of global currency,
no, not even global. I think you can take any crypto associated to your blockchain project. If the your project is good, you're gonna have a lot of users, and then you're gonna have a lot of liquidity on the crypto, and the crypto will be exchangeable. They'll find a way. Is it like from crypto to blockchain, and then blockchain to cash? Is it they will find a way. And I think this is, it doesn't have to be listed on the exchange. As long as you provide liquidity in one, two, three steps, you're good.
Absolutely.
We'll find ways.
What are you most excited about with Atari right now? Like when you look forward, so you've got the work marketplace that you're building, but on the gaming side, what's kind of next for you?
So we have four business lines. We have games, that's our DNA. We have the new console that we've just announced. That will be out 2019, 2020. So that's the second business line. And then we have gambling, casino. So that's very minor for the, I mean, for the US, doesn't really matter, but for me, it's important. And then we have blockchain. We're using the brand as a tech brand. I'm really excited. So games, we have a guy who's taking care of that. That's great. We're working on, you know, new game features, new gameplays. We're working on the Asteroid 99, which is basically the asteroids but with a last man standing mode online. So games, we're working on that. The VCS is very important. What I'm really interested to in doing is to basically see I can use the brand to create and to invest in new technology. So is it blockchain, is it I'm looking for instance into a phone right now, or having more and more examples of using the Atari brand to attract people to a new experience that makes sense. But it's true that with the Atari brand, it's very funny because it's always the same thing. And I've been through immigration here so many times and until I got the global entry system. But it would be like, you know, going through the officer and say, okay, I'm here. There's a passport. Okay, what do you do? Video games. Which company? Atari. And then all of a sudden it was, oh, wow, Atari, that's great. And then the guy would go for 10, 15 seconds about the, you know, childhood memories. But then it was always, oh, but what are you doing today? Is the toy still alive? You know, past the first reaction. So I think I'm very interested in trying to use the brand to create new experiences and new applications. Mm-hmm. Hardware is great, the new console, but long term, it's really building an online community.
Got it. What do you think the biggest challenge is for you guys as you enter into the blockchain? So there's tons of opportunity. You're really excited about it. I think a lot of people see the gaming applications. What do you see as the biggest challenge?
I think the challenge for us would be, so we have a name recognition. I think the challenge is just like everyone, it's a race. So first you need the resources. And I think it's really gaining mass adoption. So that's why we prefer to go or to use the angle of the work. Basically, I don't want to oversimplify, but sometimes, you know, that's what I decide to do. Back in the day, you would have to pay to play, right? Now it's more like free to play, so you don't have to pay. Mm-hmm. But I think down the road, you will be paid to play. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's a reversal of the proposal, right? Before I had to pay, now I'm being paid. And I can tell you this is true today, because if you play any game, you'll see a video, you're getting a boost, we're getting the money. But you are receiving a boost, a power up, because you've watched a video. So yes, you're paid in a way. And we're working on concepts like watch the video, the chips are free, and then you can earn real money.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you're getting paid whether it's direct monetary value or some other value.
Yeah, exactly.
That there's an exchange.
Yes.
You do an action, you receive some incentive for that action.
I see that. So that's why, because it's still a very, very competitive business, but because it is growing, but also as it is growing, we see a lot of opportunities. I think for us the biggest challenge is just making sure that, you know, you don't have a lot of tries, so to say. You can have 1, 2, 3 projects, but after that, it's if you fail 3 times, it's difficult. So I think for us, it's really the definition of the project. What do you really want to do? And I think going through the money angle, being okay, you can work, you can have a future. This is where, you know, the Atari brand is pretty powerful, because it's very difficult to compete against the big boys, but look at where we're coming from. So I think that's the big challenge for us, and that's also the opportunity. But the big challenge is making sure that we define exactly what we want to do. And so far, I'm very happy to have selected that angle, which is make sure that people earn a living, earn money, because at the end of the day, we all need that, right? So,
to help people have fun, be entertained, and make a living is quite a mission there, my friend. All right, before I wrap up, I always do rapid fire. What do you think the most important company in crypto is, other than Atari?
Binance.
Binance, why?
Because they provide the liquidity.
All liquidity.
Yeah, I think it's all liquidity. That's the most important thing to do.
What do you think is the one regulation that you would change or improve if you could?
I think, you know, the regulations is people. I remember all these conversations last year about utility token. Frankly, just like it's a currency, right? So for me, it doesn't matter. Make sure that you select your own. Your the reference that you want to use. If you're in the US, do it by the books. Because at the end of the day, it's a money, right? Mm-hmm. People will make a living. So I don't really care about the regulations. The only advice I have, and for me, and which we apply, is that, is it clear? Is it safe for people? Because it's a currency. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. The regulations will always change. So
yeah. Don't build the business for the regulations.
No, it's it's one of the parameters. Deal with it. It will change for sure. The more successful we are together, the more regulations there will be, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. What would you say is your most controversial thought in blockchain and cryptocurrency?
I think it's before we used to pay to play. Today is free to play, and tomorrow I think we will be paid to play.
So there's a transition between, you used to have to pay as the user or the player. Now it's free. And eventually you'll profit from playing these games.
Yeah, that's
like the value prop almost goes completely inverse to what it used to be.
Yes, because on top of it, you know, if you think in masses, what we are really providing is information about us, and you know, if it's I have a friend who always says, look, if it's free, it means that you are the product. Mm-hmm. And I think it's true. And you are the product, being if it's free, you are paid because you're providing information about you, and this is mm-hmm. why you're the product.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you should get paid for that.
Yeah. How do you think Bitcoin fits into all this?
Look, I think it's is it gold or like gold? Maybe you see. I think what is really important here is that we are seeing Bitcoin through the eyes of people who have ideas and social and all of that. If you put yourself in the shoes of somebody who is in a country where there is no currency, Venezuela, Zimbabwe, things like this, it's better to have a Bitcoin, I mean, a fraction of a Bitcoin than just the local banknote. So in mm-hmm. that sense, I think it fits well for all these countries. But I think we are not, because we live in the Western world, we don't grasp the real utility of blockchain, because it's only when you're in a situation where you have no ID, no address, no bank account, that you see, wow, am I going to get out of here? And I think Bitcoin here can help, but more generally blockchain and crypto can help a lot.
For sure. What's the most important book you've ever read?
Oh, the way, for me, it's The Clash of Civilization by Huntington, because it shows it's not crypto.
What is that about?
It's about, you know, how you have basically seven civilizations today in the world, mm-hmm. the Western, the Chinese, the Russian, and how each, some civilizations were great before, how the Western civilization was great and is still great, but the moving forces between the civilizations, mm-hmm. and that's a great book. It's a bit
Clash of Civilizations.
Yeah.
All right, I'll have to read that.
Yeah, 1990s. It's 20 years old, but still valid.
Think it's still worth reading?
I think it's still worth reading, yeah, as long as you can update it. And yeah, I think it's still valid. You know, I'm from Europe, and I see more clashes of civilizations there than in the U.S. In the U.S., I like it here because everyone is here for a reason, and you know why you're here, and you know why what the U.S. is giving you, and that's great.
So since you brought up civilizations, I got to ask, what's your take on all this the yellow vest protesters? What's going on in France?
This came as basically a short reaction initially that they basically grew out of proportions. The guy started with very, very simple request, but then the thing got out of proportion, and basically also these guys found themselves a reason, right? Yeah, it was just like, okay, what do I do? Instead of staying home alone, I'm going to see my buddies on the roundabout. At the end of the day, like, now it's out, basically. As the government provided all the answers, yeah, I think the government has provided a lot of answers, mm-hmm. so, and a lot of measures. So we'll see, you know, there will be like this waves. They express themselves in a certain way. That's it. It is just have to take that into account. But at the end of the day, you know, democracy is that people have elected some people, and you just have to deal with it. It's the third round of the elections cannot be in the streets. No way.
The Frenchmen are wild, man. I saw some videos. they were going crazy.
You always have. I mean, if you put 20,000 people in the street, you will always find one or two. At the end of the day, it's been a long movement.
It's been going on for months.
Yeah,
now,
months.
Right? Yeah.
But I think it's, for me, the way I see it is that there's no way you can have like the third round of elections being in the street. And it's going to take time because they have clearly left a huge impact on the French system. And even on the day-to-day, you know, life of people. So it's not over. We'll see. But, you know, these are long-term questions. So I think the answers will be provided also on a very long-term basis.
Got it. What do you think about aliens? Real? Not real?
Well,
do you believe in them?
So,
have you met one?
No, look, I think it's a scientific question. So I think there's no proof right now. So show me an alien. No, is there an alien somewhere, somehow? Can someone tell me, okay, they live here? No. Having said that, I think no one really understands the depth and the extent of the universe. When people say, okay, 100 billion light years, you're like, no one gets it, right?
Yep.
So I think no one gets the real number of planets out there. Every day, every week, every hour, you have new planets coming. Oh, we didn't know that. And so every day. So I think as long as you have not explored the whole universe, there will always be a probability that aliens are out there. Now, I think The second question, the first one is, of course, do they live out there? Yeah. Show me, explore any planet, and as long as you have not done that, there will always be a probability, which is higher than zero. Now the question is this a risk? Is this a chance? Is this a probability of meeting these guys? Look, it really depends on your perspective. If you're a native Indian in 1492, I'm not sure you want to meet Christophe Colomb, because when you look at the death rate after that, it's pretty significant, and it was just like, you know, a lot of dead people.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. We might not want to be discovered by aliens or vice versa.
Look at these guys in the Amazonia. You know, you were still discovering villages, right? So, I think for these guys, I'm not sure it's good for them to be discovered by us because of, you know, the new diseases. Yes. So as a human here, do you want to know that they are out there? Yes, that's clearly, you know, one of the greatest questions. There's no proof today, but I'm not sure that you want to meet them initially, because it's same thing, disease. But I think it's definitely one of the greatest questions we have to answer. I don't remember the guy who said, whatever the answer, you know, the answer is quite terrific, because if it's yes, you're like, whoa, where are they? And if it's no, it means that we are alone in the universe.
It's pretty sad.
Which is in itself, you know, quite unique. And you're like, wow, why us? And so in any case, I think I'm just losing the name of the guy. The savant who said that. But I think in any case, the answer is pretty, you know, pretty sad, and you're like, whoa, you have to think about it twice.
Big magnitude to that question.
Yeah,
that's my there's this guy Dave Portnoy who says big brain. That's my big brain question. Yeah. Are the aliens real? What one question you have for me to finish this up?
Say, why Atari?
Why Atari? Look, I think two things. So one is there are too many people who are trying to build what I'll call utility or productivity products today, right? So a lot of entrepreneurs are very stuck on the idea of you have to solve a real problem. And they've lost sight that fun and entertainment is a problem. Right, people want to be entertained. People want to have fun, and so I think that the Atari brand just stands for that. Right, it just people, you know, it's like the story you tell where somebody hears the word Atari and they immediately go back to childhood memories, and it's just these like positive moments in life that I think are very underestimated and forgotten by today's entrepreneurs. And then the second thing is you, the company, the story, the current user base, like there's a very much more global nature to what you guys are doing a lot of Western world developers and game, you know, builders and designers, they just don't understand, right? And so it's how many other game developers can say, look, I've built games that are played on, you know, 6 of the 7 continents, right? Or can say things like, we actually have partners on the ground in countries in Africa or, you know, places around the world. I think it's just very different approach that you're taking. Now, as you said, there's a lot of challenges, right? And so being able to build the games is one thing. Being able to elicit incentivize a workforce is another. But I think that if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be you guys. And seems like so far so good.
Yeah, thank you.
don't screw this up.
No, if we will, we'll always say, because, you know, we're listed. So, but no, it's a huge challenge. At the same time, you know, we're very happy to do it. At the same time, we're like, well, let's make sure we don't mess this up, because, you know, it's I did not create the brand. The brand was created by Nolan Bushnell. It was very successful. He's still around. I say hi to Nolan. There's a lot of history. So we try to do the right thing, but sometimes we're like, whoa, if we fail on that one, if we screw up. But the good thing is, you know, It's like everyone knows the brand, so that's a good thing. The drawback is just like in France, we say, you know, we have the French national team that's world champion. So you have everyone, you have 60 million people, maybe not 60, 40, who want to be the French coach. And so you go to any bar, they will just see, oh, if I wear this guy, if I wear this guy. Yeah, you have 40 million guys who want to have the job, but there's only one job, right? So I'm saying this because when sometimes I go online, I see very positive comments, I see very negative comments, I see basically people who love the brand and other people who love the brand but we don't love what we're doing. Yeah, it takes time. Just be assured that we read all the comments as much as we can.
Listen, the haters are just future fans that haven't figured out that they like you yet.
You know, coming soon.
Exactly. All right, listen, thank you so much for doing this. I really had a lot of fun. We'll have to do it again in the future. Yep. as you kind of continue to progress.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. And thanks for listening.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to that podcast. Before I let you go, one more word from our sponsor, BlockFi. Their new interest account allows you to securely deposit your Bitcoin or Ether at BlockFi and receive 6% annual interest paid monthly in cryptocurrency. This rate actually compounds, so you receive a 6.2% APY, which is very attractive given the alternatives. So you can actually take your Bitcoin, you can deposit it with BlockFi, and get paid an interest rate of 6% in return. Go check out BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, BlockFi.com/pomp. to sign up and start earning interest on your crypto today. Hey everyone, Pomp here. If you like this episode of Off the Chain and want to help us take crypto to the top of the Apple, Spotify, and other podcast charts, please do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe. To review, simply go to the Off the Chain homepage, scroll down until you see the 5 blank stars. Taking 15 seconds to fill those stars in and leave a quick review goes a long way in helping us take the entire crypto ecosystem to the top of the charts. I appreciate you listening and see you next time on Off the Chain.